Hello and welcome to this very special episode of the Picture House podcast. Today I'm joined by Susanna White to talk about her new film, Woman Walks Ahead. Thank you, Susanna, for joining us.
Well, thanks so much for having me, and special thanks for showing the film at Picture House, which I'm a big fan of the Picture House chain, so I'm thrilled to have my film there.
Oh, nice. Well, that's very kind of you to say. So with Woman Walks Ahead, we're going to be playing this in our Discover Tuesday strand, which takes place all across the country on the same night. It's a bit like sort of a TV broadcast. You know there's a good chunk of people are going to see the film all at sort of the same time. How does that feel as a director who's worked in film and television when, you know something comes out on release and you know people are watching it?
It's a wonderful feeling to have lots of people watching the film at the same time, especially, I think, properly to see it in a cinema, because I very much shot it with the cinema in mind. You know, it's conceived as a Western, a different kind of Western, a Western through the female gaze. Mm. But I grew up loving those films, like the classic Westerns of John Ford. So to have people watch it in the cinema is the place it was intended for it to be seen. So I'm very happy at that thought.
I was really struck when I was watching it. You shoot it in that lovely scope aspect ratio, super widescreen. You've got the long rolling planes. You've got scenes which have what looks like hundreds of horses and people riding them, you know, and it's very, it's a big Western. That's exciting. We don't get Westerns very often at all.
No, well, I grew up watching Westerns. You know, they used to be the opposite to what I just said. They used to be on the telly on a Saturday afternoon. And I, as a child growing up in suburban South London in a little semi-detached house hemmed in with the grey skies, it was a magical world to me, these vast open plains, you know, Monument Valley. It just seemed such an amazing world. It's one of the ways I fell in love with cinema, I think. And I very much wanted the movie to have that feel of those classic Westerns, but also to sort of turn classic Westerns on their head, because traditionally the Native Americans are the bad guys. If there's a woman, she's usually tied up needing to be rescued. She doesn't have much agency in a traditional Western. So to have a Western which is led by two outsiders, two disenfranchised people who traditionally don't have a voice, was important to me.
It is quite a unique perspective for the genre, but it feels, you know, like at this point, seeing, you know, twists on classic genres are quite in, you know, like, you know, let's look at it from a different perspective. That feels like quite a current device in filmmaking.
Hopefully it uses a lot of the tropes of the genre, but it doesn't have lots of out-and-out violence. It thinks about the consequences of violence. It uses that wide scope aspect, but the people you see moving across the plains aren't the ones you always see in a Western. I mean, there is that classic shot you talked about of hundreds of cavalry appearing. In fact, I think we had about 10 horses, which we repeatedly shot and then glued together in CGI.
The magic of cinema. It did make me sort of sit up. I was like, whoa, that's huge.
Well, that's what I want. That's what I want you people to feel. And also, I think one of the big themes of the movie is the land and whether we can truly own land and who it belongs to. And Sitting Bull talks about the spiritual aspect of land. And so I wanted people to reflect on that, on these, you know, Sitting Bull says, well, you think you can buy land? Are you saying you can buy the sky as well? I wanted people to have the sense of these epic landscapes, these epic skyscapes, and really reflect on just how small we are in the big scheme of things, that the land is there before any of us and it'll be there after we pass through our individual lives. It'll be there after any of us.
It's kind of a gift, I think, for those, that sort of philosophy, because Sitting Bull's so good at the whole film. He's making his case throughout it, and he does have, you know, quite a few rousing speeches, but the one that really made me think is about the land is our dust of our ancestors and we're breathing them in. And, you know, and it's sort of, whilst you're in the cinema, it makes you just think about yourself and that current moment.
It's a wonderful moment, that, isn't it? I mean, Stephen Knight has written a brilliant script, so it's not to demean him in any way, but a lot of the great dialogue quotes in the film are direct quotes from Sitting Bull. Wow. He really was an extraordinary person who came out with these amazing phrases. I love that speech, you know, beautifully delivered by Michael Greyeyes. And actually, there was an amazing moment when we screened the film to the Native American community in Rapid City, where people were like joining in, that there at that point in the movie, lots of the Native Americans are calling out war cries, and the audience were joining in with war cries too. And it was incredibly moving as a child who called out, "Don't let them take our land away." I'm getting goosebumps actually just remembering that.
Oh, wow.
Because the movie has been so meaningful to that community. And, you know, Ben Blackbear, who was our language consultant, because part of the film is in the Native American language, the Lakota language of that tribe. And he said, "Thank you for telling this piece of our history, which our children aren't taught in schools." So I think it has been very meaningful for that community too.
Absolutely. And seeing it, you know, with big film stars in and so beautifully presented, that must be quite a you know, like such a huge thing for them.
I think they felt very validated by it. I mean, it was strange because we've had some criticism of the film in certain quarters from critics. Why wasn't the film directed by a Native American? I was very aware of coming in as an outsider into that community and the responsibility of that. But really, the film is about two disenfranchised people. One is a woman who was a quite extraordinary woman, Catherine Weldon, played by Jessica Chastain, who was way ahead of her time. She has been reduced to a footnote in history books. Steve Knight found her as a literal footnote in a biography of Sitting Bull. And yet she was an amazingly brave woman who, at a time before women had the vote, travelled out to the Dakotas, painted these portraits of Sitting Bulls, and became a major campaigner for Native American land rights. It's as much her story as it's the story of Sitting Bull and the Lakota tribe. So it's those two stories hand in hand. Having said that, I did feel this great responsibility to get it right and portray him not as this kind of public enemy number one, which he's traditionally, well, he's been appeared variously in film, from Annie Get Your Gun, where it's kind of, I suppose, a slightly tongue-in-cheek portrayal of somebody who is such an important spiritual figure to the Lakota people, to, you know, the Sioux Indians just being seen as the enemy in Westerns, and we flip that on its head and invert those stereotypes.
Do you know, with the script and in sort of the early days of the project, what sort of research went into this? Because it feels like, as watching it as I did in the cinema, you know, it felt like it was sort of painfully accurate.
Yes.
There was a lot of, like, I think you go out of your way to sort of bring in characters who talk about things that are going on in the wider world, things that are going on in Washington, and
yes,
it felt like a little snapshot of the time period, and it made me go on Wikipedia afterwards and just read more about it. I wanted to absorb more.
Yes. Well, the project was initiated 16 years ago by Steve Knight, so it's been a long time in the making. I only came onto it about 4 years ago, and I did more work with Steve, particularly around the character of Catherine Weldon. At the time Steve discovered the story, it literally was a footnote. There was very little written about her. Subsequently, there has been a biography of Catherine Weldon written. But certainly Steve had done a lot of research into the politics of the period and the land rights issues of the period. And I come from a background in documentaries. My first impulse is always to go into a community and learn as much as I can about them. So I spent time on the reservations at Rosebud and Pine Ridge, and talking to the elders and talking to the tribal council. And of course, Michael Greyeyes, who plays Sitting Bull in the movie, although he's not a Sioux Indian, he's a Cree Indian from Canada. He brought a lot to it as well. I had an assistant from the Pine Ridge Reservation. So I tried to involve the community for my own benefit as much as anything, as much as I could, but also to empower people within that community. So Willie White, who was my assistant, you know, as a young filmmaker from the Pine Ridge Reservation. Yeah, we tried to be, although like any movie script, we take some license with the strict order of things just in order to give a proper dramatic arc to the movie. It is based on a, you know, a very moving political story.
When you first, you know, you go to the community and you tell them what you know, why you're there, the project you're making, what was their first reaction? Can you remember?
There was some suspicion at first, because I think these are people who've, well, as you can see from the film, they've been lied to repeatedly, cheated repeatedly, and it took a bit of time to gain their trust. But one of the sort of most moving experiences of making the film for me has been the way that in the end, when the community saw it, I've really been embraced by them. And they gave me this wonderful Lakota name, which translates as woman who gets things done.
Oh, wow.
And there was a big naming ceremony where they gave me an eagle feather. And so I think it turned out all right as far as they're concerned.
That's incredible. I think a lot of when people think of filmmaking, you know, you think of the going to film festivals and the premieres, but actually stuff like that, that must be the stuff that you really remember.
Yeah, it's really, really meaningful that actually the people whose story I tried to tell in this film, it really mattered to them. And they're people who feel their voice hasn't been heard. You know, it was a privilege. It was humbling to get to make this film.
You've got such a great cast in this film. Jessica Chastain, Michael Greyeyes, Sam Rockwell in a supporting role, Kieran Hines, always a joy to see. At what point do you start looking for those key roles, the Michael Greyeyes and the Jessica Chastains?
Well, I think Jessica was the first person who came on board when I was attached as director. And, you know, what a dream come true to have one of the greatest actresses in the world at the moment attach herself to the project. Then the search was on for Sitting Bull, and we saw a huge number of people in the Asian American community and then narrowed it down. And then we did what we call a chemistry read to see what the connection was like with Jessica. There was no doubt that sort of everything lit up when the two of them were together. Then we just worked away, and what a thrill to get Sam Rockwell, who is an actor I've admired for such a long time. And it was before Three Billboards when we made the movie, so he didn't have the profile that he does. He was obviously, he had a following in the indie world, but he didn't have quite the public profile that he's got now. God, it was a joy to work. You know, we just see these great actors at the top of their game. It's an incredible privilege to be working with them and to get Kieran. And also then some people emerged, like the person who plays Kieran's wife, Rulan Tangen, who we'd brought in originally because she's a dancer, she's a choreographer, she helped choreograph a big sequence of the ghost dance in the film. And then I realised she was a completely fantastic actress. And so we started giving her more and more to do. And to me, one of the most moving moments in the film is when she translates Sitting Bull's great speech about the land bit you cited, about the dust of the ancestors. She translates it into English for the benefit of the people from Washington who can't understand the Lakota language. And I think to have the meaning of that through the lens of that character, as you see her so moved by what Sitting Bull is saying, is a wonderful moment in the movie and an unexpected moment. You know, there were various discussions about whether we should just have it in Sitting Bull's voice and whether that should be subtitled. And then I argued very strongly that I thought we should have Rulan translate. I really loved that moment in the movie.
I was thinking about that when I was watching it, because he starts to talk and there's no subtitles. I was like, oh, it's quite bold. And I was just sort of thinking, like, in, you know, your brain thinks a million things a second. I was thinking, oh, how are we going to get the speech across? And then she starts to talk, and it's such a good idea, and it makes it like a bit more tense. And how are they going to react to what she's saying? She sat right there. He's miles away. He's fine. But she's surrounded by people, and she's having to deliver the stuff. And is she enthusiastic? Is she passionate? Does she have to, you know, keep her feelings inside? Like, what? How is she delivering these lines on his behalf?
Well, it was very, very important to me that we should enter the Lakota world on their terms. That traditionally in Westerns, it's been like the white person's perspective. I wanted to come in and see it through Catherine Weldon's eyes and ears as an outsider, that actually she's entering into a world which the Lakota tribe have lived in for thousands of years. It's their world which we're stepping into. So it was a bold move to have so much of the film in the Lakota language, but a very important one to me, because it's saying we're entering this world on their terms and we're the outsiders.
Absolutely. Another sort of great moment that I was thinking about when I left the cinema was their first meeting, Sitting Bull and Catherine's first meeting, when he's farming potatoes. And like, that's quite, because, you know, I certainly knew his name, but wasn't familiar with Catherine's name before going in, but sort of introducing this really famous character. You've done it in such a great way. He's got his back to the camera. He's wearing a hat. He's looking at the soil. How did you decide
and
to sort
not
of stage
wearing,
that?
He's not wearing a sort of war shirt and feathers, as
Absolutely.
You might expect. He's wearing Western clothing, which is actually... Well, we based a lot of it on research. We had a fantastic book which became our Bible called Photographs of Wounded Knee. And it was contemporary photographs of that community at Standing Rock from the time. And when you look at the photographs, the Native Americans, well, it was an offence to wear native dress. You had to burn all the traditional native dress and wear Western clothing. It was imposed on people. So that is how Catherine would have met him, wearing Western clothing, not as somebody in kind of war paint and feathers, as you might expect from a traditional Western. And she's rather disappointed when she meets him. He's not the person she thought she was going to paint, and she's begging him to put his native dress on. So it's one of the lessons she has to learn, is that there's been this act on the part of Washington of trying to wipe out the traditional culture of the Sioux Indians. And it's a big part of her journey coming to understand that.
As a director, do you tend to rehearse those scenes ahead of time somewhere else and you sort of decide on that?
Well, that scene was one that actually, when we did the chemistry reads, that was a scene we'd worked on. You always get a bit afraid of those scenes when you come to shoot them because you've worked on them so much. So you have to sort of put them to bed for a bit and forget it. And actually, we started shooting it and then I wasn't very happy and we went away and came back the next day and I kind of restaged it in a different way, just to make it fresh for the actors. And then we started getting something exciting happening and it was really windy. And sometimes the weather is your friend because it adds an element which just changes things. And I think the other big thing about that scene is, and one thing Steve has done so well, is it's got tremendous humour in it. And I think it, you know, Sitting Bull is tremendously intelligent and he's really, really funny. And hopefully all the Native American characters in the movie are really rounded individuals and they're not a stereotype. But they're actually, you know, a set of rather extraordinary, wonderful characters. And that's not something they generally attended to be in traditional Westerns.
They're individuals, which is quite unique.
Exactly.
Normally, you're right, it's sort of they're the fret, and that's all they are. There's probably loads of actors all playing the fret, and this everybody's roles are quite clearly defined. I really love that, especially you have a good montage of at one point having to go to various tribes and various people to unite them, and you get to see people from all walks of life, from the elders to young people, and I quite like that.
That was something we really wanted to show was the differences and the fact that a whole community had to be persuaded to vote in a particular direction, try and escape the stereotypes as much as we could.
On a sort of more of a logistical level, this is a period piece. You're in the wild quite a lot, outside, lots of horses, nature. Is this quite a challenging just shoot on a filmmaking sort
physically,
of
physically, it was quite a challenging shoot. I mean, we shot it in 31 days, which isn't very long for a big period drama. We shot it in New Mexico because we got a tax break there. There were some aspects of New Mexico which didn't look like the Dakotas, like cacti, for example. So we had to dig up all the cactuses that we encountered because they were just wrong. Yeah, it was pretty funny. It was tough on Jessica, who's got this wonderful pale complexion, and we had to try and keep the sun off her as much as we could. It was very hot a lot of the time when we were shooting. I mean, to be honest, I'm quite robust as director. I'd shot Generation Kill in the desert in Namibia, and I'm a bit used to it. Yeah, it's physically demanding long days outside in the desert, for sure. You have to drink lots of water and keep exercising to keep your fitness up.
So yeah, the costumes are quite ornate for the actors, from the soldiers wearing, you know, very ornate coat, and Jessica and all of her many layers, as you sort of show in the film, as when she gets undressed after coming in from the rain.
Yeah, exactly. I think it was tough on them. It was very hot. And Jessica also didn't shy away. She said, "I want to sweat." Catherine Weldon would have sweated, and she was very un-Hollywood about it. You know, she said, I want people to see just how physically tough it is being out there and how amazing Catherine Weldon was doing what she did." And so she sort of embraced the physical challenges of the role. Yeah, it's certainly tougher than sort of two people talking in a room making that kind of a movie. But on the other hand, it gives you these tremendous gifts you don't expect. You get wonderful light and the moment at the end of the movie when... Well, I won't give too much away, but there's a big scene between Sitting Bull and Catherine at the end of the movie, and the sun is going down and we get this amazing sky, and then suddenly we got a thunderstorm happening in the distance and these flashes of lightning, which I'm sure people will think we created in CGI, but we didn't.
There's so many sort of shots of the landscape where the sky and like it contrasts beautifully with the costumes or the soil. Is that just a pure sort of luck?
That's just the light of New Mexico. You get this amazing light in New Mexico, guaranteed. Every dawn and every dusk, you get extraordinary skies and light. And I think the challenge for us was, because we were on a limited schedule, I was trying with the DP to avoid shooting in the middle of the day too much, you know, when the sun was high. And we'd try and retreat inside a teepee or something when we could. But it wasn't always possible. But we tried to maximise best light whenever we could, just to take advantage of what nature was doing for us naturally, which is our biggest... You know, you'll see actually... I'm glad you feel like there were hundreds of horses and things, but actually we didn't have very many. But I knew what could save us was the landscape, that you didn't need to see always hundreds of carriages and things, that actually that landscape hasn't fundamentally changed since the 1880s.
It looks like a painting at some points. It's such a treat to see that. You know, we often see visual effects spectacles, you know, lots of money's gone in to make it look impressive, but just seeing the uninterfered with landscape at the hour you were shooting is such a joy.
And you know, a lot of credit goes to our cinematographer Mike Ely, who I've worked with for nearly my whole career. Wow. I started out making documentaries with him, and he came out to shoot it, and you know, he was a wonderful presence on the film.
Finally, I was wondering, at the beginning you mentioned growing up with Westerns. Were there any sort of Western references you were like, I'm shooting a Western, I have to do this scene, I have to show that thing in my Western film?
I think it's just that endless horizon, that the ratio of sky to land, where the land's very small and people are tiny in the face of it. You know, I wasn't shooting in Monument Valley, which probably would have been my dream in some way. So I think it's more a kind of process of having absorbed those things deep into my subconscious, and there wasn't a single reference I'd say, okay, this is a reference to that film, but it's just those things went in very deep into me as a filmmaker.
Were you ever tempted to ride a horse?
I was, although I wasn't meant to on the insurance. But yeah, we had some fabulous horses on the shoot. And the wranglers knew I'd be round at the weekend.
Oh, fantastic. Well, thank you so much for talking to us today, Susanna. We're really pleased to be able to play this film in our cinema. See it on the big screen.
Well, thank you so much. As I said at the beginning, the big screen is what it was meant for. So I hope people will take the opportunity to come and see it that way.
Absolutely. And you'll be at Picture House Central for a Q&A on Friday, 22nd of February.
I will, with Steve, Steve Knight, who wrote it.
Fantastic. Well, we'll see you both then.
Look forward to it. Thanks
very much. And a huge thank you to Silk Factory, proud supporters of the Picture House podcast. Silk Factory are an awesome film marketing creative agency. We're sat in them right now, and it's beautiful. They make the coolest trailers and creative content out there across TV, digital, and social platforms. We think they're great. We record the podcast here. They're super, super nice. We love their fantastic work, and you can check it out at www.thesilkfactory.co. And we'll be back in a couple of weeks.